soldiers and people who want to control and deceive know exactly the people who will disturb their plans.
That's right.
And those people are artists. They're the ones that tell the truth. Something that the society has got to protect.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of This Thing Changed My Life. Every time I start this show, I always say we have an amazing guest, and I get excited about every single guest, but we actually truly have an amazing guest today. We have Sarita Domingo. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm all right. We move, as they say, as the kids say. I'm managing.
Yeah. So Sarita is obviously a big bad boy author. That's who she is. She writes incredible. I mean, to be very honest with you, your work ethic is wild, because I feel like you put out a book and then it's like, yeah, Sarita's got another book. And I'm like, wow, I can't keep up.
Yeah, it has turned out that way recently. Like, it was a bit sort of, I had a book out and then like a long gap, and then it was like, oh, they're all just sort of coming at once, which wasn't necessarily intentional, but I'll take it. I'm not complaining. So, but I've had, you know, one, two books out recently.
What do you mean, one, two books? These are amazing. I'm actually really excited for the book that's coming out, or the anthology of like, essay coming out next year. Well, I remember when that first came on my TL and I first heard about it, I was like, oh, this is going to be incredible, because it's obviously not something that we see a lot of Black women talking about.
Yes.
Romance and love. So mm-hmm. Very excited to hear that. But let's get straight on to our fire questions. I'm going to ask a question that, actually, I haven't been asking people and I keep forgetting, but I'm going to ask you. So Sarita, what are you currently reading? Easy. What are you currently reading?
Okay. That's easy. That is easy. I'm reading Boy Parts by Eliza Clark, which is being published by, let me not get this wrong, but I think it's Influx Press, an independent press. But it is a lot. Like, I'm near the end and I'm like, whew. It's about a young woman who is a photographer, and she is, I think she's based up north somewhere, but she went to like Central St. Martin's or something. And so she's like an arty kind of photographer. And she, at the beginning of the story, it's not really a spoiler to say that she like has to take a hiatus from work. She's like been working in a pub and something happens and she's like, they're like, don't worry about coming back. But she's pursuing a sort of photography project. And it's, she photographs like random young men that she meets on the bus or like in Tesco's and stuff, and does these weird intense photo shoots with them. And then you like something is revealed, but it's wild. It's a bit like American Psycho is harsh, but like it's crazy. It's, but really, really well written and really compelling character, but intense.
When is it due out? Is it due out soon?
It's out.
Oh, okay.
I think it just published like maybe in the last month or two. Boy Parts.
Nice. Oh, wow. Perfect. My favorite question, obviously, is to you, the greatest artist of all time?
I mean, what a question. Because that's so broad, but I'm gonna go with Prince, because of the like number of things I feel like he could execute at the very top of his game. And like, you know, multi-instrumentalist, incredible singer, incredible dancer, incredible writer, like lyricist. So yeah, I feel like he takes the cake overall. Like Prince, what couldn't he do?
So So
maybe act, I don't know.
I think people who could possibly act. But what's so funny is, I'm going to blame it on the fact that I'm foreign, but not really, because I came when I was like five, and most people who listen to Prince, like, they're not, you know, black British. I cannot, from the top of my head, this is going to be so embarrassing. Not from the top of my head. I probably know of a Prince song because it's possibly played around me.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I cannot name a single one. I need
it. You can.
I can't.
Purple Rain.
Oh, I know that one.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll take that back.
Yeah, so you know Prince songs. When Doves Cry, you know, Nothing Compares to You. I know Sinead O'Connor did that, but that's his song.
So,
and he wrote loads of amazing songs, like wrote lots of songs for Chaka Khan and like loads of people. He's a legend, obviously.
So, you know Prince. I'm going to take all that back.
You know, he's like embedded in the culture, I feel like. Yeah.
I think what I mean is I don't like consciously go out to...
Yeah, no, fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's only recently that I've like really engaged in a lot of music consciously, I think, in terms of music past... before late 90s.
That's fair. That is fair. Like, I feel like at the moment as well, I haven't been like, I'm a massive, massive music head. Like, music is one of the most important things to me. But during this whole quarantine period, I've been listening to stuff like this, like podcasts. I don't know if I just need people's voices, like conversation, way more than I've needed music, which is weird for me because like music is usually the thing I would turn to. So that's been interesting. But yeah, Prince.
How about reading, finding that you've been reading a lot during quarantine or?
I went through a period where I wasn't, but I think now I'm back in it. I've been trying to do like a tick list of stuff every day, like make sure I do some extra, because I read before bed to like get off to sleep, but I've got this diary that allows you to write in each week like a list of things that you want to do, and you tick it off each day. Okay. And I try and do like exercise, writing, obviously. I've been learning the bass guitar, so I'm trying to do like a bass lesson, like you can do them online. And I try to do extra reading and meditate.
Nice.
And I hardly ever get all of them ticked off, but that is my aim. So I've been trying to do more reading. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same thing. At the beginning, I was reading loads, and then literally I felt like I've gone 2 months without reading, and I'm only
really
now I'm only coming back to it. I've started with The Vanishing Half. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Oh. Amazing choice.
Everybody.
That'll get you back into it.
Yeah. I've seen everybody talking about it. I was like, oh, you know what? Let me just read this book. And yeah. Perfect. Next question. Close to books. The greatest piece of writing that you've ever read.
See, again, I mean, one of them might be the thing that changed my life. So I don't want to say that yet. I'll save that, but I don't know if it's the greatest, but there's a poem called The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which is actually quite like I quote it at the beginning of my latest book, If I Don't Have You, and it's sort of, there's a theme of it running through, but it's a T.S. Eliot poem, and I just really relate to it, like the sentiments of it, the kind of, do it, like he says, do I dare disturb the universe, and like I've just always had quite a hesitant sense about like taking risks, or like what if something goes wrong, what if I say the wrong thing, and it's kind of a poem all about that and about trying not to have regrets. So that just, yeah, the minute I read that poem, I was like, wow, that really resonates with me. But then I recently found out that he's like a horrible, he was a horrible, horrible individual. So that's awkward, but his poem's good. So
they always are, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like you've got to ruin it.
Yeah, I, as much as I try to separate the art from the artist, some things that I'm like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. Or what I try and do is, as of recent, I think we must have cancelled an artist. And what I try and do is, I don't know, he said something that really annoyed me. It was on like social media and I was like, ugh, don't like you. But I really loved his previous album. So the way I justified it to myself was, you know what, this was, I didn't like you from this period. So
it was like a date. Yeah, fair. That's a good idea, actually, because like it's weird with people like Michael Jackson. I've just been like, genuinely, I do now struggle to listen to his music. And prior to, you know, like, yeah, he was one of my favorites, like from childhood. And it just sort of ruins your whole image of the person. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's so hard to separate the two.
Yeah. The one thing for me is R. Kelly. Like, I remember that's one artist that I cannot separate. And every time I hear something, I just go, oh, like there is this something inside me that I'm like, oh, that's ruined that. Like, I can't overthink it or try and make an excuse. It's just, it's ruined. Fantastic. Thank you for that. And the last one, is there a sort of mantra or a life lesson or a quote that you that really resonates with you and is embedded in, you know, your work or your life and you try and live by?
There is, actually. That one's quite easy because it's tattooed on my arms. It's a Toni Morrison quote that is from she did a talk at Sarah Lawrence College, I think, which is a university in the States, in like 1988. It was like a commencement address or whatever, when they get people to come in and give you like a pep talk before you graduate. But during this talk, she said, dream a little before you think. And that is a phrase that I definitely try and live by. As I say, I got it tattooed on my arms as a reminder. Say again?
How so, in terms of how you see you work? How do you dream before you think?
I think just trying not to like get in my own way, which I really hate as a phrase, but I just said it, so hey. Like trying not to overthink things. I guess it goes back to the same way I feel about that, the Prufrock poem, but kind of thinking about, just let your imagination run wild, and particularly creatively, like before overanalyzing something, just let yourself be, or let myself be the most creative I can be, like the most imaginative I can be. And to dream big, like actually how, you know, like in terms of ambition as well, like not sort of restrict myself.
Yeah. Toni Morrison always comes with the quotes, and with the intro, you know. This podcast actually is her talking. And when I was like planning this podcast, I was like, I want something that denotes the importance of the artist in every walk of life. And I saw this interview, and I was just looking around, and I saw this interview, and she, you know, says how, you know, the artist just is political, very afraid of the artist. And I just was like, oh, this is it. This is what I want to donate. Like, this is the importance of art in our lives. It changes politics and social stances and everything.
Exactly.
When she talks, oh.
Yeah, I mean, she's one of those people where, like, there are a handful of artists, as you say, like Maya Angelou, obviously Toni Morrison, where you're just like, how do you speak in such eloquent and complete thoughts and sentences? It's, like, it's amazing. And yeah, I mean, Toni Morrison, she's
they're so calm. They could be literally reading you for film.
Exactly.
Thank you Thank you so much for those questions, and hopefully you guys have learned more about Sarita and what goes on in Sarita.
Doubt is what goes on.
No, but I love that you put that into the art, and you know what, it makes what you said translates so well into romance and love that I'm like, oh, yeah, she was made for this. But I asked you to give me a few things that have changed your life with regards to whether it's books, music, film, everything. And you gave me the whole shebang, which is what I love. Because sometimes people like one thing and I'll be like, okay, we need more things to talk about.
Yeah.
And the first thing that you picked up, I'm so glad you did, because it meant that I didn't need to read it because I had already read it. Beloved by Toni Morrison.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Beloved, I can actually picture where I was when I finished reading it. It was in my halls of residence in my first year of university. I was sitting on the end of my bed and I like closed the book. I was devastated, absolutely blown away. And I started reading it again immediately, which I've never done with any book other than Beloved. Like, obviously I've reread books, but I've never reread a book back to back, like rewind, come again. Like, so yeah. And it was just I felt like when I read Beloved, I was like, oh, so the greatest writer in the world is a Black woman. And I'd like never, I didn't know till I read that. I was like, I hadn't read any other Toni Morrison books before I read Beloved. And I was just completely blown away. I was doing, I did comparative American studies as my degree. So it was history and literature of the Americas, like North and Latin America.
Yeah.
And obviously, so I was studying, you know, obviously the slave trade, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like Beloved said everything that needed to be said about slavery. Like, there was nothing more that you would need to say about slavery than what she's embodied in that book. And just, you know, the use of language, the journey of it and the emotion of it. You know, I know that it's based on a true story. I think it's Margaret Garner was an enslaved woman, and she, I mean, spoiler alert, but not really. Who hasn't read Beloved? Read it. But, you know, obviously it's very tragic, but she tried to kill her children rather than let them go back into slavery. And that's kind of what the book is based on. And just finding that story and writing that story and understanding that the level that you'd need to go to in order to, you know, the lengths you'd be willing to go to prevent another human being having to be involved in the horror that you've just experienced, and that person being from your own body, like, just so intense, obviously, the whole thing. But then it's also so, like, it contains some of the most romantic lines I've ever read. Like, you know, the stuff with Paul D when he's saying that she's a friend of my mind and she puts the pieces of me back in the right order. I mean, who, what, like, bars, you know? Just all together, I mean, Beloved, what can you say? Whew.
It's such a grand book. And every time I read Toni Morrison, so I, in the beginning, I found Toni Morrison really, really hard to get into.
Yeah.
I think when I read her, I had read a few things before, but the manner with which she writes is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, it's slow, but also very rich, that you, I feel like every line is very weighted. And as a young reader then, I just found it very difficult. I read the first book was The Bluest Eye, and oh my God. I remember putting it down after a few pages and being like, I can't, like, this is not fun.
Yeah. I mean, she is the kind of writer where you could, I guess that's why I reread it immediately, because you do feel like you could legit go over every single line again and again and again and get, you know, like, you need to process after each line almost. You're like, whew, okay, let me sit with that for a sec.
Back straight away. Like, I would have been so full. I would have been like, oh my God. Like, I remember finishing Beloved because I just, with The Bluest Eye, I read a few pages, put it back down again and said, okay, I need to be in the mood or in the environment and in the headspace to read this. And when I finished, it was like, but it was like I had just experienced something of such a grand scale. It's like being overfed. It's like you're having this delicious meal and there's so much of it. And at the end, you're just like, I got meat sweat. You know when you have lots of food in your
stomach? Yeah. Meat sweats. That should go on the next jacket that they do of Beloved. Rafa, this will give you meat sweats. Amazing. I love that description. But it's so true. Like, it's just, she's so rich. Like, yeah, there's exactly, there's so much to deal with, to process. But particularly, like, it kind of, it hurts my heart when people don't go back into her work or will be like, oh, it's a bit too much for me, I can't. Like, I do meet quite a few people who are like, oh, Toni Morrison, I can't, you know, I can't really get into her work. Yeah. Particularly when it's Black women, I do get quite impassioned about it, because like she expressed herself, she was writing for us, like, and it's just so, when you really kind of think about that as you're reading her work, it's like she genuinely wasn't writing for a white gaze. And it, that feels rare and special. And particularly because she's such a gifted writer, you're like, what a gift. Like, thank you for writing this for me, for us. Like, ugh, I love her, as you can tell.
I actually have, God, I think I've got all of her stuff, right? I've got Super, which I really have always said I wanted to read.
That is one of the few that I haven't read. I can't say I'm a completist. Like, I haven't read every single, I do have all of them, but I haven't read all of them. Like, but yeah. Have you read Sula? What, did you get to it yet?
Yeah, same thing. Read the first two pages and I said, okay.
You need to, like, be ready.
Yeah. As well. Like, I think Beloved is probably like her thickest book.
Yeah.
Because everything else is rather small but very weighted. So, Beloved, nice. Did you get anything from Beloved in terms of how you process your writing, the things that you try and your writing, or does it just have a
space? I wish. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's funny because a lot of the kind of, I do think about trying to make sure that when I'm writing, I think about, you know, on the level of sentence, just trying to make sure, is this the strongest sentence? Is this, could I express this in a different way? Could I express it more meaningfully? And I think that is definitely Toni Morrison's influence. When I first, like, some of the first stuff I wrote, like at university, I did a like creative response to Beloved. We could, you know, like when you had to write an essay or whatever, one of the options was to write a story instead. And that was probably one of the first things I wrote that I was like legit proud of and got a really, you know, I got a first, you know. Cool. So I was like, oh, maybe writing is a thing that I'm like pretty good at. And I suppose I have Toni Morrison to thank for that. But yeah, I don't know. We do quite different, you know, we do, like, I'm on her level. But, you know, it's quite different sort of thing. But I definitely think her influence is there. How could it not be? Yeah, in my writing.
Yeah. Right. Moving on to the second thing that's changed your life. this one, we might argue over.
But
content. Love Jones.
Yes.
Now, I watched Love Jones. I think I actually watched it last year, end of last year, at like Christmas for the first time. And I loved it. However, I love the romance part of it, right? The spoken word poetry part of it. So, to me, I was like, no, I don't need this.
Oh, guys.
Like, what are you guys doing? I think I'm biased because I think I'm a brown sugar fan, right?
Yeah.
So comes to those, you know, in the 90s, early noughties, black American movies. Everybody has their field. You might be a love and butt kind of girl. You might be the best man kind of girl. I'm in the camp of brown sugar. Tay Diggs and Sanaa Lathan is where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. So I mean,
in this field. Why are you a love zone fan?
You know, I think it actually is kind of because, like, I get what you mean. The spoken word in the wrong context can be a bit like crunchy and kind of cringy. But I think it's because I hadn't seen a film that was a romance between two black people and they also were engaged as artists, like as writers. They're both kind of they're both poets, I think, and she's a photographer, but she's like trying to get her spoken word on as well. And just having that kind of getting to see a scene of like artistic black people, you know, their leisure time was like going to hear other people read poetry, or, you know, like listen to jazz and stuff. And you know, I was quite young at the time that I first saw Love Jones, but I was still like, rah, like there are, you didn't really get to see films about people that did stuff like that. Yeah. And their friendship group was kind of interesting. The whole tone of the film was just like black. Kind of, yeah, exactly, just black. It really was exactly that. And it's just like, it felt revolutionary to me. And I think it's the filmmaker whose name I'm unfortunately forgotten, but I think it's the only film he's made, and I think he wrote and directed it. But it was just like, I liked the kind of the way that Nia Long's character was as well. Like, she felt quite similar to me. She's quite sort of like easily irritated and dismissive. Like, I mean, if is it Lorenz Tate? Is that his name? That's so terrible. Why have I forgotten? Is Lorenz Tate in Love Jones? Yeah. I'm going to say yes. We can Google it if you've forgotten the cast. But he's like pursuing her and he's buying her albums and all stuff. And she's just like, ugh. She's like, I don't know. There was just something I really liked about the way her character was. And I didn't really get to see characters like her as well. And he's an author. You know, it was just the feel of the film was just like, I don't get to see characters like this on screen. And so it genuinely did feel revolutionary.
Yeah, I actually am trying to think of something. I'm trying to think of another film that talks about black artistry and black artists socializing and falling in love with their particular groups. And I actually can't think of any. So you could be on the right trail here. Yeah. I think maybe, obviously, I watched it last year, so I bombarded. It wasn't, to me, it was just, oh, okay, you know, but I've seen this before. I can understand how seeing that for the very first time and experience, just wow. And we don't really, yeah, when I look back, I mean, what, Friends was just an all-white cast with a random black girl, but imagining that, I mean, I think we kind of had that, but it wasn't as, you know, wild. I remember when I watched Girlfriends to me was like,
yeah, I'm so annoyed that, because I only dipped in and out of Girlfriends and I haven't really like watched it online or whatever, but I know that they've got it on Netflix US and it's just like, come on, they've got all sorts of amazing shows. They've got Moesha and everything. I'm like, come on, can't we get that here?
No, but you love Girlfriends.
Yeah.
As in, I mean, Joan, who's like the main character, is like this black lawyer who's like wanting to become partner. And I'm looking at that like,
so she's you? Is this what we're saying?
Very annoying character though. So I wouldn't want to be her exactly. But I could mess with her life. I see that. I see that for myself.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess now we've got like Insecure, which kind of feels like a successor in a way to Love Jones. Like some of the interaction is obviously, Love Jones isn't like funny, but it's kind of amusing. But some of the feeling of like the friendship groups interacting and stuff feels similar to Insecure. But yeah, I mean, I think Love Jones was one of the first times I got to see anything like that on screen. And I'm still waiting kind of for it to be in a UK context, but I'll take it.
I think I May Destroy You was, was pretty good, even though it focused less on the art and more, I guess, on like consent and sexual issues. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, Michaela Cole's character was a writer and going...
Yeah.
To finish a manuscript. I'm actually going to ask you about that later because I'm like, I need these tips because she's writing up and down and I need to know how she's doing that. Finally, Frank by Amy Winehouse.
Yes, the god Amy Winehouse.
Why did this album change your life?
I think because like I say, I'm massively into music, but the first time I heard Frank, I was like, she encapsulated, like, Amy Winehouse and I, like, rest her soul, but we're kind of age mates, and she was just expressing something about being a sort of young woman in London. She was kind of in a genre that I love, that's kind of jazz, but soul. Her voice was impeccable. Her writing is what I think really sets her apart, because it's just so visceral. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. And Frank, you know, obviously I heard Frank before. I know like lots of people really, really got into her with Back to Black, which is obviously an incredible album and in many ways a better album than Frank. As far as I know, I think some of how Frank sounds, like, you know, sonically isn't quite what she had actually envisioned. But I was just like, who is this girl? Like, where did she come from? How is she singing like this? Like a Jewish girl singing so soulfully, like, you know, in a manner that you might associate with a Black singer, but clearly so influenced by jazz, which I love. And it was just like revolutionary. I was just like, I can't believe this person exists and is like out here singing songs that feel so relevant to my life. Like, I just couldn't believe it.
I actually never really sat down to listen to Frank. The only thing I remember with Amy Winehouse is, I don't know how, but her death really triggered me. I remember, because I think I was pretty young, I listened to a few of her music, and I think that for me, I don't know if she died before Michael Jackson.
After. Now that you mention it, I think it must be after, but not long after. It was around the same time, kind of.
Like, I remember Michael Jackson's death shocking my aunts and uncles and me a little bit, not that much. Mm. But Amy Winehouse was like, Amy Winehouse?
Yeah.
I think was she around 26?
I think she was 27, because it was that whole thing where everyone thinks people die at the age of 27.
Yeah. That's actually all I remember. But yeah, I always thought her voice was so much different to how she looked like. You know how you have to have someone have their voice, and you just, how did those two come together? I always, especially when
exactly.
I'm and they sound like something else, though, and then I see them. Could be my own bias.
No, it's true. And like, I think later on, so with Frank came out before, you know, like with Back to Black, she had a very specific image that everyone now can conjure with, like the beehive and the sort of winged eyeliner, very, very skinny and stuff. Whereas when Frank came out, she was like a pretty voluptuous girl. She didn't have a particular image beyond just being kind of like quite a typical North London kind of chick that, like, I used to live north, I'm south now. And I'd like go to Primrose Hill with my mates and there'd be like Amy Winehouse.
Really?
She'd just be like on the hill with everybody else. I mean, to be fair, it was quite a good place to celeb spot. But we'd just be like, is that Amy Winehouse? Oh yeah, okay. You know, she just felt like somebody you'd know, but also so talented that it was like that weird combination of like, I know this person, she's writing music that's for me and that I can really identify with, but also she's a genius, like, and super talented. Yeah.
Thank you. I feel enriched. You know,
yeah. Go back and listen to Frank.
I will listen to Frank from beginning to end, and then I will send you a DM about it.
Yes, please.
So there you have it, folks. Beloved by Toni Morrison, Frank by Amy Winehouse, Love Jones came out in 1997, I believe. Those are the three things that have changed Sarita's life artistically. Yeah. Moving forward, Sarita has a new book out. And she is now the current author of If I Don't Have You. I actually listened to it on Audible.
Ah.
That first chapter, I was like, a part of me was like, this is a little bit erotic, isn't it? But it's not. Like, it's just an interview. And I was like, but why am I feeling things in my body? What is she doing? What is this girl doing? How did you have the concept for this book and how did it, you know, manifest?
Well, I wanted to write another romantic story. Like the first novel I wrote was a romance as well. And The Nearness of You. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to explore the idea of a person who's like a Black British woman, particularly being very ambitious, and kind of how she would deal with being blindsided by like something that's not in her plan, like falling in love with somebody. And I love the you know, the films Before Sunrise, and then there was Before Sunset and Before Midnight. They're romantic films that take place over one night. So like the first one, they're in Prague or somewhere. I can't quite remember. But so they're in the city and they're sort of stranded together and sort of fall in love. I wanted to write a story like that, which is what happens at the beginning of If I Don't Have You. Kayla is sent to interview. So she's an artist and she kind of is a journalist as well. And she's sent to interview a filmmaker, Ren. And yeah, they have like chemistry off. I kind of wanted to put two people together and see what would happen if they have chemistry off the bat. And then they are given the opportunity to like steal a night together, a moment together, what would happen. So that was sort of the catalyst for it. And I did, I've said this before and I'm like, why did I say this? But I'll say it again. I had a really weird dream about Eminem, who I'm not interested in. I'm not attracted to him. I don't really listen to his music, but I had this weird dream about him where I was sent to interview him, but I was late. Mm. And so I had to like go to his apartment to interview him, and it was just a really weird thing, and I was like, oh, maybe that could be something that I use for a book.
Yeah.
So that also was like a weird little starting point as well.
How long did it take you to actually like start, well, from having that dream about Eminem? How long did it take you to, you know, put this baby out in the world?
I don't know, maybe 2 years or something like that, from like the very, very inception.
Yeah.
To, yeah, because I did do like a little bit, I did some planning for it, obviously. And at first I had written it slightly differently. So the book is in three parts. And I had written the first part with the sort of night they spend together, throwing caution to the wind kind of thing. And then the second part of the book was all emails and letters going back and forth. So like no actual sort of prose narrative, which I quite liked, but then I changed my mind and rewrote that bit. And so that took a bit longer. Yeah. And then the third part. So yeah, overall it was sort of, yeah, maybe a couple of years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
When did you, because I know I read your article on, is it Black Ballad? Actually, there's a line that you that I love. It's, you said, romantic love is the synthesis of almost all of our emotions. And I just went, but when did you, because currently what we have, what I feel that we have in the British Black canon of literature is a lot of nonfiction, a lot of identity language, a lot of identity novels. So whether it's, which I think a lot of debut novelists do when they write their first book, you know, they will tackle things that, whether it's race related, you know, class related, social mobility. And it's very rare to have somebody writing about love, which is afforded to, it seems, everybody else but Black people. And it's almost revolutionary for Black women and Black writers in general to just write about love, not in a context of trauma, but just romance. And was that a conscious choice for you, or was writing romance something that you just wanted to do?
I mean, I think it's become more conscious for me. I think at first, with my first book, The Nearness of You, which does, I think it maybe touches on traumatic stuff a little bit more, like, but not really in the context of race still. It was more, I mean, she does find a dead body in the first chapter. So it's not like, it doesn't launch in a particularly lighthearted way, and it is quite an angst-filled romance. But I did just, I'm not quite sure what drew me to romance. I think it was just that I did want to write it. I like the feeling of it. And I think that's what compelled me to write it, because that's what I love about reading romance, is the kind of getting to live that experience, which, like, as I said in that quote, like, it's just so, why wouldn't you want to experience that over and over again? And getting to experience that through the pages of a book, you know, you do get to, you know, repeat that feeling, which is, I think, why romantic fiction is so popular. I guess like crime fiction, you know what you're going to get. And so that was kind of maybe what drew me to the genre. But it has become more conscious to me that, like, especially, you know, obviously, as we know now more than ever, we kind of just want somewhere we can escape to not have to constantly be thinking about the traumatic stuff that we as Black people need to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And not to say that that doesn't come into, you know, writing Black characters at all, because obviously by default it does. But yeah, I think I feel more conscious about writing romance as an escape. Like, I think even with the earlier drafts of If I Don't Have You, there was more dark shit happening in it, and I was like, you know what, come on, like, lighten up, let's not do that.
One thing that I was actually, when I was looking at like your body of work, the romantic fiction and also I would say YA, the covers are so bright and bold, and what you would expect something of that nature to be. And I just realized that I have just been reading a lot of, not dark, but just heavy subject and getting to live and experience fun stuff and not even the lighter stuff, because, you know, I don't think you can make light of love. But made me realize I actually haven't been reading a lot of books that is afforded to everybody else. So I was like, oh, I'm so glad that there is somebody writing this, because we now.
It's like I was saying in the piece that I wrote for Black Ballad, I think it is with romance, it is important to feel seen within that kind of, and it's important for any genre really, but I do feel like with romance, it's sometimes a bit harder to find those stories that we as Black people can like truly identify with, and particularly in a British context. Like, I don't feel like there are that many writers out there writing just romantic stories. But what you were talking about with the kind of identity politics type stories, or I guess race related books that are coming out, I think there are probably people who aren't writing that kind of stuff, but it's more what gets commissioned or what the type of people who are buying books might think is important or relevant. So I think it's just boosting the idea that, like, come on guys, we need a broader spectrum of like types of stories.
Is it that you think that romantic novels are trivialized when it comes to either the marketing or even just the people reading it? Do you think that they want to be seen as reading these, you know, deep dark books rather than a romance?
Yeah. Definitely. I think romance as a genre is dismissed quite a lot. It's seen as fluffy or like insubstantive, or like that it won't have anything important to say. But I mean, who doesn't want to experience love in their lives? Like, it's a pretty bleak, bleak existence if you don't want that. And so, yeah, I think there is sort of a snobbery around romance. And even as a writer myself, I mean, in my general reading, I don't actually read a huge amount of romance, and I do tend to read more literary fiction. And I feel like that influence is there in my work. And so I sometimes feel a bit like, oh, but I need to justify my writing. Like, it's not just romance, there's like other stuff, which is true, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with also just being a romance writer. It would be great if like we got a little bit more respect.
No, I do love that you're focusing a lot on love, especially with your anthology that's coming out next year. Really excited.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God. yeah. But when people read, whether it's If I Don't Have You or any of your work, what is, I guess, the main message that you're trying to put out there and the main thing that you would want your readers to take from your work?
I guess just a belief in like the power of romantic love, and not that everybody, you know, there may well be people that is not their focus, and I can't say that that's like my day-to-day focus, sorry husband, but like I do want people to kind of consider that I want them to feel that feeling that the characters I've written are going through, you know, the ups and downs of it, and the idea that they deserve it. Yeah. That's important to me, but also, I mean, particularly with If I Don't Have You, it was very important to me to write about ambition and about, artistic ambition. I guess it was kind of like for myself in a way, but for anyone else who kind of needs to hear that you can strive, you can like have ambitions, you can strive towards doing something that isn't just what everyone expects you to do, and that you can succeed, and you can also find a really hot guy and fall in love, I guess. I think I want people to believe in themselves.
Oh, that's so lovely. Okay, finally, the writing process. We need all of them now. We need them all. Okay. your style of writing, how is it? Is it disciplined? Are you a waking up, banging out 1,000, 5,000, you know, words per day? Are you a sporadic all in the moment? How is the process of writing for you?
Well, certainly when it was pre-pandemic, when it was going into the office and all of that kind of thing, I was probably more disciplined about getting up very early and writing before going to work and after work. I've never been a person, I've never been like a word county kind of person. Like, I've never thought, right, you need to write X amount of words a day. And because I'm an editor, I think that the slight downside of that is that I have a bad habit of going back and back over work before I can go forwards, which I would recommend not doing. I'd say that the best possible technique, which I've heard a few people say, is to try and like end midway through a scene or midway through a sentence even, so that you can flow straight into writing again without having to like go back and back and like trying to perfect the thing you've just written the day before, because it's just a much slower process. But that is also sometimes helpful. So first of all, you can't do anything with a blank page. Like, you need to get the project down, you need to kind of get to the end of it before you can really start to work on it. So I think that's something that I've definitely learned. But I also tend, I used to be much more about planning out the storyline and all of that. And that came from, I used to work at a job where we would, it was like a fiction packager. So that was part of the job. We would actually literally come up with the plots to books. Wow. And that's another story. But so I was much more into planning things out, but which can help. Obviously it's easier to get a first draft down if you know exactly where you're going, but as long as you don't, like, I don't stick too rigidly to that now, I think that just ends up stifling you.
Yeah,
but it can be helpful when trying to just like get something, get it down so that you can work on that. But generally speaking, I make a lot of notes before I start writing. Like, I will write longhand notes, and then I tend to have the opening scene in my head and the general idea of what I want it to be about. But so I'm about to start writing a new book. And for that, I'm really, really trying to think about the ending. Because, you know, that people always say like, oh, well, if you know the ending, then you can know where you're going. But I have struggled with that. Like, I find that very difficult to do because you don't really know. Well, I still don't quite know how to nail down that think of the ending first thing. But that's something that I am attempting to do at the moment.
In my head, I don't know why I have, as you said, I have scenes. And I think maybe it means I should probably go into screenwriting rather than books. So in my head, I will have the beginning. I will have the thing that causes the problem or the climax or the thing that needs to be resolved as a scene. And I will have the ending. So currently I know how it's going to end. But
that's everything you need.
But it's the in-betweens. It's, for example, like I'll be like, okay, I'm writing this chapter. And I've been going back and forth of whether I should be writing in a linear fashion. I don't know if that's how you write. Do you write linear or do you write, I have this scene in my head that needs to go on paper?
Oh, I write linear. I know some people do kind of just write scenes, but I feel like I need to build from thing to thing, but it could be a genre thing as well, because maybe that might work well for mysteries or like crime type stuff. Or if it's very much not, you know, some books just aren't really all about the narrative drive. It's more about the feel and it's like a character study. So if you have a particular scene, like you want a scene between like your character and their mom or whatever, that can be helpful. What I have done in the past is do scenes that I'm not going to include in the book at all, like have a character see a therapist and like write the scene of their discussion, but not plan to include it in the book itself, but just as a way for me to like situate myself with that character. That's quite helpful.
Yeah. Right, final question. What are the, for you anyway, the biggest tips for like budding writers, but also maybe specifically those wanting to go into romance? What is the biggest tip you have for them?
Well, definitely the you can't do anything with a blank page. Like, just write something down, legit. Like, even if it's 5 pages, that's something for you to build from. Because I think it's so easy, particularly if you are like a creative person, you have a story in your head, you can kind of get too fixated on like, I want to write it, and it just becomes too big to deal with. So you can't like just actually do it. You need to actually do it. That's the first tip. For romance, do think closely about your characters. And also, conflict is so important. Like, what's going to get in the way of them being together? Because otherwise it's just too easy. Nobody wants to read a story that's just two people meet and then everything's fine. I mean, that can happen in real life, but in a story it's kind of dull. So think about how you can craft your characters to give them different issues that will create conflict, and try and have some of it be internal, maybe a couple of things external.
Perfect. And before we leave you, you mentioned that you're writing. Are we going to get a sneak peek? Are you going to be able to share with us the genre, or like, you know?
I mean, I've as you say, I've got the anthology, which I'm so excited about. That's it's called Who's Loving You. That's with Trapeze Books. So that's coming out in February 2021, and I've written a story for that. And that is an anthology of romantic fiction, written by loads of amazing British women of colour. And then I'm like, that's quite a lot of romance that I've done. So I was thinking about trying something a bit different that's not necessarily romantic at the forefront, but we'll see, because I'll probably just be like, you know what? I actually just want to write another. But yeah, I'm thinking about mixing things up a bit, doing something a bit different.
Oh, well, we're excited. I'm looking forward to it. And I'll be there doing the retweets and then the likes.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. That's you. We've had Sarita Domingo, guys.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your work and I've been loving it for a long time. So it's a pleasure to be on here. Yeah, you can find me at saritadomingo.com is my website, and at Sarita Domingo on Twitter, and at Sarita Domingo author on Instagram.
Fantastic. There you have it, guys. Make sure you retweet, like, subscribe, comment where all the things are. Make sure you reach out to Sarita. Make sure you read her books. If I Don't Have You is out, and I guess it's out everywhere. Waterstones, the Amazons, all your independent books.
Oils,
all of them. Make sure you go and read it. We need a bit of love and romance in this very horrid time. Thank you guys so much, and I will see you guys next week. Bye.
Remind us all that art is dangerous, and it's something that the society